This morning's scripture reading will be from Matthew chapter 4, verses 18 through 22. Again, that's Matthew chapter 4, verses 18 through 22. As Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. "Come, follow me," Jesus said, "and I will make you fishers of men." At once they left their nets and followed him. Going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John. They were in a boat with their father Zebedee, preparing their nets. Jesus called them, and immediately they left their boat and their father and followed him.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It is a pleasant day to be here. I know that you probably would oppose me by saying, well, the sun's not shining. Well, the sun doesn't have to shine for it to be a pleasant day, I don't think, does it? But I think it's great to know that we are here. And at the same time, we want to encourage you to come back and be with us this evening at 6 o'clock. There is a great privilege to be able to do that because there are some folks that are not willing to do that. And then again, there are some folks that don't know to do that. But it is a very great responsibility on our part, as well as it is a privilege on our part to be back here as we are here this morning at this point in time. Let me read something to you and listen very carefully to this. It came to pass that there was a group that existed that called themselves fishermen. And there were many fish in the waters about them. In fact, the whole area was surrounded by streams and lakes and fish and were hungry. Week after week, month after month, year after year, this group called themselves fishermen. They met in meetings and they called themselves to fish. They had the abundance of fish that were out in the lakes, in the streams, in the rivers. And they talked about how we might go about fishing. Year after year, they carefully defined what fishing meant. They defended fishing as an occupation, and they declared that fishing would be the primary talk of fishermen. These fishermen built large, beautiful buildings for local fishing headquarters, and their plea was that everyone should be a fisherman and that everyone should fish. However, the only one thing they did not do, they did not fish. In addition to meeting regularly, these men determined to send out fishermen to places where there were many fish. The sending committee was headed by those who had great vision and had courage to speak about fishing and to promote the idea of fishing in faraway streams and lakes and rivers. And they held meetings to define fishing, to defend fishing, and to decide what streams should be fished in. But the one thing that staff and that sending committee did not do, they did not fish. Large, elaborate training centers were built whose original and primary purpose was to teach fishermen how to fish. Over the years, courses were offered on the needs of the fish, the nature of the fish, how to find the fish, and the psychological effects of fishing. It was called fishology. But the fish were only there in the streams while the teachers taught about fishing. There's only one problem. The teachers did not fish. Further, the fishermen built large printing houses to published fishing guides. When there was a meeting or conference on fishing where they organized a special speaker to talk about fishing, after one stirring meeting of the necessity of fishing, two young men left the meeting and actually went fishing, and one of them caught two fish. That man who caught two fish was honored for his great catch and was scheduled to appear all over the country at big meetings to tell how each fish was caught. He quit fishing so he could tell others about his experiences as a fisherman. Now, it is true that many of the fishermen sacrificed and put up with all kinds of difficulties. Some lived near water and had to put up with the smell of dead fish. Some had to endure the ridicule of some who made fun of these fishermen clubs because all they did was claim to be fishermen, but they did not fish. They wondered about those who thought it was of little use to attend meetings and talk about fishing. After all, they said, the master fisherman said, "Come, and I will make you fishers of men." Imagine their disappointment when someone actually suggests that they are not really fishermen. Did it make sense? That they could rightfully call themselves a fisherman, but year after year, month after month, and week after week, they never went fishing. How can you really say that you would be a fisher of men if you don't go fish for men? Doesn't make sense, does it? Not at all. You may have the opportunity to go fishing and have a limit. You can only fish for so many. Once you catch those so many, then you got to stop. Maybe you go out fishing and you don't catch anything. Maybe when you go out fishing, maybe you just catch just enough, whatever that enough is. But the thing is, you go fishing. You just don't sit back and plan all these things. You actually do what it is that you have the readiness and the will to do. In the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 8, I want you to notice something in this. I want to make an application of the things that are asked that the people have, I should say, the readiness to do in the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 10. These people at Corinth have an opportunity to help someone who's in need, other Christians in the area of Judea. And herein I give my judgment, Paul says, for this is expedient for you who were the first to make a beginning a year ago, not only to do, but also to will, but now complete the doing also. That as there was the readiness to will, so there may be the completion also out of your ability. For if the readiness is there, it is acceptable according as a man has not, according as he has not. What is it that Paul is trying to get the people to understand about this? He wants them to have the readiness and the will to do something. Once they have this readiness there and this will, that he says in verse 11, complete what you're ready to do. Complete what you're ready to do. Just don't sit back there and talk about, well, I'm ready to give. I don't care what it is. You just tell me when and I'm ready to do it. Their readiness is there, but now he says complete what you're ready to do. Once they were to complete what they're ready to do, what do you think they should be thinking about? Well, I hope they take what we send to them and they spend it the right way. They're not called upon to make sure they know what the results will be. They're not called upon to say, well, I want to make sure that if I give this, it's going to be spent the right way and for the right things. They had no control over that. Only thing that was acceptable, he says in verse 12, is according as the readiness is there, as a man has, not as according as he has not. The readiness and the completion. That's what they're called upon to do, not the results of it. When you make this parallel to what's going on about making disciples, there are a lot of people that are ready. And when I say ready, they talk about how it is that this is something I need to do. There are a lot of people out here that are lost. This church needs to grow. And all these statements about readiness are out there. People make them all the time. And this attitude's out there. And a lot of times when it happens is at the beginning of the year. We've got to do this, we've got to do this, and we need to do more of whatever that is. Well, that readiness is there. But then, as you see what he says in verse 11, we've got to complete the readiness. It's not just that the eagerness is there, and not that we see the things are there. We've got to complete this. I just want to make sure that when I talk to somebody, they're going to accept it. I don't want to be rejected. I don't want to hurt their feelings. I don't want them to turn away the Lord. You're not called upon to examine all the results and rationalize and justify why you should or shouldn't do it. If the readiness is there, just complete what it is that you're wanting to do, and that is responsibility that you've got. You can't call yourself a fisherman if you don't go fish. But usually it's the results of what we're looking for. Well, if we're going to talk about the results, I think we need to think about this. We are willing to give. But what we're willing to give is to fulfill the motivation of the fact that Jesus died for us. This is what's causing these people to do this. Their readiness is there, but what's omniscient in this whole idea is what you go back in verse 9 and say, we know that the grace of the Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, that ye through his poverty might become rich. This should be the motivation. besides the readiness, we got to want to complete this because of the richness that's in Him. Not the results. Not the results. Well, let's talk about the results. Let's get this. Let's talk about this and get this out of the way. Josh Ferries, Wednesday night, did you hear the numbers that he gave out Wednesday night? About all the different religious groups, Christianity, 33%, Muslim, 21%, Hindu this, and all those other ones way down the line. He gave the numbers. He gave the numbers. Well, sometimes we need to understand that the people that truly respect and appreciate the richness of Jesus and all that He did, those that have the readiness in the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 8, those that are willing to complete it are only maybe one handful, maybe two. Just a handful of people. A handful of people. That's a few in number. And that's exactly what Jesus said in the book of Matthew chapter 9. The harvest is plenteous, but the laborers are few. Laborers are few. Let's talk about the numbers. Let's talk about the numbers because evangelism is about the numbers. It's about the people that are few rather than the many. Let's talk about evangelism regarding numbers. And that's what most people like to talk about. It's the results of the evangelism. But in order for the results to be in any form or number, it takes the readiness and the completion of the people who are teaching. The success of evangelism is the teaching. Not just so much the numbers. Evangelism is about the numbers. You know where all this started? The book of Acts chapter 2. In verse 41, there was about 3,000 souls that were saved that day that were added to the Lord. Matter of fact, in verse 47 of that same chapter, there were daily additions. Evangelism by the numbers. And then you see the increase of that in the book of Acts chapter 4, verse 4, 5,000. And then even in the book of Acts chapter 8, 9, verse 31, it multiplies. Evangelism is by the numbers. But these people just don't become to be numbers in the kingdom just on a whim. It's all because of the teaching, the readiness, and the completion of the people that do the teaching. The numbers of the souls that are saved are directly associated with those people that do the teaching. That's where these numbers come from. What we need to do, we need to talk about the numbers. Because numbers in evangelism matter. And here's the numbers. What matters in evangelism is the amount of faith, the number, the increase of faith that I have in the Lord to do the increasing. That's the evangelism by the numbers. The amount and the increase. Am I looking for God to make a way for these things to happen? To evaluate your desire to speak to others about this, just ask yourself this question. How many? How many have I helped? That's evangelism by the numbers. Not the results now. It's not the results. It's what the people are doing to bring about the results. How many times have I prayed that there would be a door that's open? That's evangelism by the numbers. You want evangelism by the numbers? Let's take out a list. And there's a list available in the scriptures. If I were to give you a list on a sheet of paper and hand it to you, invariably, if it was a list of about 20 things, invariably somebody's going to come over and say, well, I can't do that. I can't do that. Don't pick out the one you can't do. Pick out the one you can do. And I'll tell you what, when you talk about the list, it's there in the scriptures, and there's something on that list that can be done. Evangelism is by the numbers. On that list of the things that God is asking you to do, there's something that can be done by everybody. Something by everybody. That's evangelism by the numbers. Evangelism by the numbers is the number of reasons you need to be a teacher. And I'll tell you, that's not the exhaustive list. Well, you'd go to the great command like was given to the apostles in Matthew chapter 28, verse 18 to 20, about going into all the world. We could talk about that being part of the reason why that list or that number as to why it is we need to do this. We could talk about the matter of self-preservation. I remember the case in the book of John chapter 15 when Jesus was talking about abiding in me. He said that there's a branch out there that doesn't bear the fruit. What do you do with that branch? You cut it off, you purge it, you pile it up with the rest of them, and you burn them. Think about an employer and employee relationship. If an employee is not doing the best at his or her job, although the owners say, well, they're not causing any problems. As long as they're not causing any problems, then that's okay. But how long do you allow the employee to work if there's no results? I guess you'd say no production. Nothing that shows for what they should be doing. It's a matter of self-preservation. How long do you think God's going to just say, okay, you're in the church, that's okay. You come to worship, that's good. What about the valuable soul? What about the terror of the Lord? What about the fact that we are a debtor? All those things. What about the fact that when you look at the scriptures and we talk about how it is that we need to be more like the New Testament church, that's another reason. And the list goes on and on of all the things as to the numbers of reasons why we should be doing this. Think about the joy that can be experienced by others as a result of one that's been converted, like with Zane Atkins. You talk about evangelism by the numbers? Let's talk about the numbers. Let's talk about the numbers of people near you. Let's talk about the people that are your customers. Let's talk about your patients. Let's talk about your children, your spouse, the people that are on the ball team with you, the parents of the children that go to school with your children. Let's talk about the people that are members of the same civic club or organization that you're in. Let's talk about evangelism by the numbers. The people you see at the restaurant, visitors that come into the building. Let's talk about evangelism by the numbers. Let's talk about the person standing right there in front of us at Walmart, about to check out, and we're right behind them. Or they're right behind us, and we're in front of them. What about that plumber that comes over there and fixes that leak? Or that stopped up drain? Or that guy that fixes the air conditioner unit? What about those people? What about those people that you order something from every single year at a certain period of time, a certain time of the year? They're everywhere. The numbers, evangelism by the numbers, increase the more you think about it. And then, here's this serious one. Evangelism by the numbers is the chances that we give Satan to continue to hold on to the people that he's already holding on to by our lack of not doing what needs to be done. In other words, when we get distracted and when we get discouraged with all of the teaching, he keeps winning more and more people. Now, granted, we may talk about the scriptures in front of people and talk to them about Jesus Christ, and they may reject it, and they may say, I don't want all this. Don't need this. And he may gain more by that. But yet, if we're discouraged and we're distracted, how many more is he going to gain? A whole lot more. And he's especially going to hold on to the people that he's already got. It's evangelism by the numbers. But what do we do about this? We need to make a commitment of time. In the book of 2 Corinthians that we read just a minute ago, in the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 10 to verse 12, there was this commitment made on the part of the people at Corinth to do something to help these brethren down there in Judea. They made a commitment to do it. We need to make a commitment to, in some part of our week, to do something to help the teaching take place. For a soul that needs it. Whether it's in terms of minutes, or it's in terms of hours, if it's in terms of a morning, or an evening, or a day, whatever the case may be, some point in time, a commitment to that time. And the commitment to that time Like I mentioned to you a while ago, it goes beyond the fact that we say we need to do this. And this is something that's very important, and I need to do more of this. It's not as much as that's the commitment as it is, I decided this is what we're going to do. This is what I'm going to do. Unless we commit to it, it's not going to happen. It is not going to happen. I must help you understand something here, though. When you decide to do this, it will require, it is an expectation that you will have to sacrifice something in order to do it. Something. Let me give you an example. In the book of John chapter 4, there was a case where Jesus is there. He's on the way from Jerusalem, going back up to Galilee, and he goes through the area of Samaria. Watch verse 7 of John chapter 4. There cometh a woman of Samaria to draw water. Jesus said to her, give me to drink. For his disciples were gone away into the city to buy food. Jesus, weary because of the walk, he stops by the well, by the sixth hour of the day. He sends the disciples in. He's letting his lunch break go by. He's willing to forsake eating at this moment so he can talk to this woman that's coming to him at the well. Again, I say, there will be a time, if you find yourself doing this, that you will have to sacrifice something in order to make it happen. Set the time and be accountable to the promise that you make. This is not a New Year's resolution, folks. This is a commitment to this. Now, let me just say this here. I think it's going to be very important. When we talk about this commitment to this, it can go in a lot of different directions. It could be the commitment to sit down 10 minutes a day and pray about the opportunity that God gives you to find a door open that you'll be able to teach. That could be that commitment to it. It could be that the commitment is for you to sit down and get a sheet of paper and write down the names or a name of someone that you love dearly and have compassion for, that you would like to know, like to see know more of the truth. That's part of this commitment. You could reach somebody at some point. It could be also that this commitment to time is that you sit down and prepare a lesson, some kind of outline of what you're going to teach to somebody. Because one of the things that we do sometimes is we want to do this, but we don't know what to say. We don't know what to say. Have no clue. But so therefore, this commitment of time is one of these things where you could sit there and you could write out what you're going to teach to someone just in case you never are able to teach them again. All those things are there. All this interest comes as a result of our knowing what needs to be done and that souls need to be saved. When we teach this truth to people, when this commitment to time does actually fulfill itself and is completed and we do this, just be aware that we've exposed two things. We've exposed the truth to someone. We have also exposed our love for these people. At the same time, and they know it, and they see it, because you're exposing them to the truth that you already know, and you're exposing them also to the love that you have and interest in them to teach them. Your commitment to this is going to take the time. So allow yourself to do this for the sake of those people. Do not think that this idea of commitment is, well, I just need to live a better life. And I'm going to let my light shine in front of everybody. Well, you need to do that. Without a doubt, you need to do that. But just don't let speechless examples teach somebody. You've got to open up your mouth. People need to hear your voice. They need to hear what you're saying. They need to hear this love. They need to hear this truth. Something I think is going to be very important to you as well, when we talk about this idea of making disciples, is improve your capacity to connect. Improving your capacity to connect. Because two things. Number one, as Philippians chapter 2 says, we need to know who we are. Philippians 2 verse 15 says it this way. That you may become blameless and harmless, children of God, without blemish in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation,
among whom you are seen as lights in the world, holding forth the word of life, that I may have whereof to glory in the day of Christ, that I did not run in vain, neither labor in vain. This is who we are. All right, what are we supposed to be doing? Well, think about this in 1 Timothy. Go over to 1 Timothy chapter 4. 1 Timothy 4, verse 16. Paul says to Timothy, take heed to thyself and to thy teaching. Continue in these things, for in doing this thou shalt save both thyself and them that hear thee. This is who we are, and this is our influence. But I want you to look at your calendar. Not right now. Don't do that. I mean, you may, in your mind, know what your calendar's about, but yet go through the day or go through the week and look at your calendar. Who are you in touch with most? Who you are in touch with most? Most people that are Christians are in touch with people that are not Christians. Most people that are Christians are not in touch are with people that are Christians. Most of them are in touch with people that are not Christians. Then, one of the things that we do as soon as we hear that, we say, oh, you got to be careful who you're around because they'll influence you to do wrong. If we're going to be the people who are going to continually expose ourselves to unbelievers, even though the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 15, 33 says, evil companionship corrupt good morals. If we're going to be the people that's going to expose ourselves more to the people in the world than we are the people that are Christians, then we've got to accept the challenge. We've got to find ourselves committing to the responsibility of doing what we can to teach. I want you to notice something in the book of John chapter 15. This is what Jesus said in John 15 to his disciples regarding their exposure to the people of the world. Look at John chapter 15. Let's begin in verse 16. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit and that your fruit should abide, that whatsoever ye ask of the Father in my name, he may give you. These things I command you that you may love one another. If the world hateth you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love its own. But because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Remember the word that I said to you. A servant is not greater than his Lord. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they will also keep yours. They will keep yours also. But all things will they do unto you for my name's sake, because they know not him that sent me. What Jesus is doing is preparing them for their exposure to the world. If they're going to be out there with him, and if you're going to be out there with him more than people that are Christians, then you're going to have to see this responsibility. People are going to have to see in you and through your voice what it is that you believe about the truth. They need to see the seriousness that you have about the scriptures and about who you are. Like Philippians chapter 2, verse 15 says, light of the world, that you're the one that's going to live godly in this present world. As a result of you exposing yourself to these unbelievers, they see you put yourself there, and you've got to meet the challenge to not be influenced by them, but to influence them if you're going to put yourself there. Are the people that you expose yourself to going to know more or less about Jesus and the church through what you do and what you say? Because you've exposed yourself and willingly made yourself available to a world. If this is your choice, you cannot dismiss this responsibility. You can't just say, well, I don't have any friends in the church. Boy, is that going to make an impression upon the people that are in the unbelievers in the world? Because you don't have any friends with the people in the church, is that going to lead them to Jesus? Probably not. What we can do to make sure that we improve our ability to make sure that we connect is to take the Lord seriously. Take the Lord very seriously. And ask ourselves the question, will these people know more about Jesus and more about the church because of our connection with them? Well, you can do it in one of three ways. Probably all three ways. Pray for the availability to God. Pray that you'll be available to God to do this. There are places that you will be that others will never be. There are places of which God has put you that no one will ever be there again. No one but you will be there. And as a result of being in those places, do you pray that God will let you be available to Him to work with for Him? Let me let you think about something here. In the book of Galatians chapter 2, verse 20, this is what Paul says. Galatians 2, 20, I've been crucified with Christ, and it is no longer I that live, but Christ liveth in me. And that life which I now live in the flesh, I live in faith, the faith which is in the Son of God, who loved me and gave Himself up for me. He is saying, God, I'm available. Use me because I'm living by faith now. Same thing's true with Peter in the book of 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 13. He is wanting to be available. Peter says, I know I'm in this for a reason, and it's to be available for God. And the second thing I think is really important is that you be aware. You be aware of what's going on. And those people that you need to be aware of are those people that walk down the street in your neighborhood. I bet you that some of you have seen people walk close to where you live and you haven't seen them before. And you're thinking, where'd they come from? Who were they? Where do they live? I would imagine that some of you have been in a doctor's office and somebody left their coat on the chair. And you think, well, they left their coat. They left their coat there. And what do? You run them down to give them their coat back. And there's probably been an instance where this past week, probably on Tuesday, that there was somebody at work that you saw their face when they walked in and they had this sad disposition on their face. And you wonder, what's wrong with them? And probably on Thursday of this week, or some other day this week, you may have heard somebody say, I wish I could get some help. And they're not talking about monetary help to pay their bills. They're just saying, I need some help. All these instances where you see these things happen and these things are going on around you, you've just got to be aware of what's happening. Be aware of what's going on around you. There's a man one time who, as I mentioned, this illustration of this person walking down the neighborhood, he saw this woman and this boy walking down the street in their neighborhood sometime about middle of September. And he didn't know who they were, anything about them. But then came Halloween, last part of November, October. They came up, this woman and the boy came up to the door, knocked on the door, trick or treat, give him the candy. And he asked him, said, do you live in this neighborhood? She said, oh, yeah, I live down so-and-so. He said, oh, I just seen you walking down. I never had seen you before. He says, I just appreciate you coming by. It's good to meet you. Well, two weeks later, that man, this woman came to the house, that man had a gospel meeting at the church where they were attending. And he found that lady's house, went up to them, and invited them to church one night during that week. And she said, and this is where the awareness comes in. She said, interesting you came along. We have just been trying to figure out where we're going to go to church. And as a result, she came, started learning and studying, and became a Christian. But that brings up the third point, and that is improving your capacity to connect is to act. It's to act on what's going on. You can be aware and you can be the one and can pray for availability, but you've got to act on something. You're sitting there, let's say for example, you're sitting there with a colleague at work and you're talking about all kinds of things that's going on, and all of a sudden you just talk about your outside interests, whatever they may be, whatever they are. But have you ever included in part of your outside interests Jesus and the church and your involvement in the Lord's kingdom? do you include that as part of your outside interest? This is your ministry, folks. This is where you're used. This is where I'm used. And you can sit down there and talk about, oh, don't bring up that C word, church. Don't bring up that J word, Jesus. But if you were to bring up that C word and that J word, and you get into this spiritual conversation, it may stop right there, but you don't know that. But it could continue for the next few minutes to the point you go to the next level, and that is you sit down and you study with these people. You don't ever know. You just don't ever know. Tremendous responsibility, isn't it? A lot of opportunities. I want you to turn with me here in the book of Colossians chapter 4 as we conclude this lesson this morning and let you think about something. This is the next to the last verse of this whole book. One of the things when I see people, there's three questions that always are raised in my mind. One is, do they go to church anywhere? The second question is, are they spiritually minded? And the third question is, if they're not spiritually minded, would they want to be spiritually minded? Those are three questions that always race through my head every time I meet somebody and talk to them for the first time. And it's my opportunity to do everything I can to do exactly what he says here, that he is praying to Archippus that he would do in verse 17 of Colossians 4, take heed to the ministry which thou hast received in the Lord, that thou fulfill it. That is, in essence, the same thought that we talked about in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 10 to verse 12. Where the readiness is there, complete it, fulfill it. Take heed to the ministry that thou hast received in the Lord, that thou fulfill it. That's my responsibility. And I hope that maybe you can take it upon yourself to fulfill the very same thing. You know the readiness and the completion needs to be there. You know evangelism by the numbers we talked about. You know it's a matter of commitment to the time. And you also know that we've got to improve our capacity to connect to people in all those ways. It's not all these results. As I said last week, that number over there will take care of itself. We're called upon to do the teaching. And let God work in the hearts of those people that teach, that we teach, and that are taught through the Scriptures to obey. But yet, do we believe it? If you're a person that's not a Christian with us this morning and you believe it, then God is calling upon you to change your life, to confess that he is the Son of God, that Jesus is the Son of God, and be baptized in the water to rise up to walk in newness of life. That is what he's asking of you to do. Will you do that? You can be a part of this. You can be the key ingredient in bringing another soul to Jesus, just like you were brought to the Lord. But those of you, like myself, that are brought to the Lord already, where is our commitment to the time that it takes to do this? Are we lax? Are we neglectful? Are we excusing? Are we justifying why we shouldn't do it? Or are we determined with the readiness that we're going to complete this? I hope we are. I hope we do. Let's just do one thing. Let's just do what's right while together we sing this song.